Good morning again.
Good morning.
This morning, we had the joy and privilege of welcoming a child into our community. Little Stanley is just beginning to explore this world, to find out what it is that he loves and who he might become. It is our job as his community of faith to help guide and support him as he uncovers and travels the path that is uniquely his. Today is also a special day for me and for you, the Fox Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Today we begin uncovering and traveling the path of a new shared ministry. For those of you who might have missed the memo, I'm Reverend Christina Leone Tracy, and I'm your new settled senior minister. Back in May, when I was here for candidating week, we had conversations and meetings and opportunities to discuss some of the ways in which my ministry and yours might be a good fit for the fellowship and your mission of welcoming everyone, growing in mind and spirit, and leading in social justice. What an exciting week that was. Do you remember? Yeah. And it culminated in you, the fellowship members, voting to call me as your new senior minister alongside Reverend Leah, who has served for 5 years as your associate minister. But today the rubber hits the road, friends. My family and I have relocated to the Fox Valley. I'm settled into my new office here at the fellowship, and I am ready to start this journey with you. Now the fun really begins. And just like with little Stanley or any child, we are starting off learning who we are. Now, I know who I am as a person and as a minister, but I'm still very new to being your minister. And you know who you are as people and as a community, but you're still very new to this shared ministry alongside me. We're beginning to find ourselves and our way together. And there will be bumps and falls and mess-ups. I have a son, Nevin. He's 19 months old, and he's now past the walking stage, and now he's running. And I never knew that one human body could fall down so many times and still get up, but it's possible. He is proof. He's pretty bouncy, my little guy. And that's what I hope to cultivate together. A sense of fearlessness, of willing to try, even if we're not sure of the outcome, even if we fall down, a sense of bounciness. As Reverend Robin Tanner said in the words that we used this morning in our call to gather, blessed are they who fall in the mud, who jump with gusto, who rip the pants and skin the elbows, who bruise the ego, for they shall know the sweetness of risk. One thing that I love most about children is that they have a good sense of their own calling. They listen well to their inner voice. They have not yet learned the realities of the world that might tamp down their enthusiasm or hopes or dreams. They know who they are, and they believe that all things might be possible for themselves. That's why most kids feel pretty confident that they could be an NBA star or an astronaut. Or a fashion designer or a firefighter. These paths are all pretty challenging. Not everyone has the aptitude or the ability to reach those goals, but little kids, they're still open to the possibilities. They have not yet internalized the no of the world yet. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Just think about that for a minute. If you have kids in your life, kids, grandkids, friends, what do they want to be? Who do they want to be? Were there people in your life who nurtured that voice of calling for you? Were there people who stifled it? Are there ways for you that your adult life has reflected the calling of your childhood? How does your childhood calling live on, or how doesn't it, in the life that you have lived and that you still live today? I'd like to tell you a little story about me when I was a kid and my callings. And it might explain a little bit about how I got to be here today after all. So when I was a kid, I had a lot of experience in the hospital. I was born with a lot of complicated and pretty serious medical conditions. And they've since been fixed, and I'm pretty healthy now. But suffice it to say that I was well-versed in medical terminology at a young age. And so it was pretty understandable then that I wanted to be a doctor. I played with toy medical kits on my dolls, and I made my parents and my brother sit still for procedures. But like most kids, I had more than one calling. I was known to say that I wanted to be a babysitter, a baker, a doctor, and a crayon maker when I grew up. You know, all those lucrative crayon making careers out there. But one of my callings was less clearly articulated. I wanted to be a minister, but I didn't really know that. I didn't have the words for it. But what I did know for sure was that I was drawn to religious community. Now, this is interesting because my family aren't church-going people. Now, my parents are listening to this on a podcast, and they hate when I tell people that, but it's true. They're wonderful, loving, justice-minded, thoughtful, charitable people. Did you hear that, Mom and Dad? My parents are wonderful people. They just don't go to church. It's not their thing. That's okay. It's fine to not go to church. But church was definitely my thing. I would go with my friends, and I loved it so much. I loved the people. I loved the activities. I loved the potlucks. I loved the singing. I really loved the rituals. And so I brought church home to my room. I would construct churches in my closet. I would hang a sheet over my clothes, and I would line up my stuffed animals to read Bible stories and teach prayers, to be submerged for baptism. Some of my stuffed animals were never quite the same after that. I had a Magna Doodle toy, and I would proclaim religious truths like a marquee outside my door. And my parents, bless their hearts, they were so supportive of this, even though I'm sure they were sort of scratching their heads at my proclivities. Eventually, I outgrew stuffed animals, and the closet churches ended. But I was still attracted to church. And at the Southern Baptist Church that I regularly attended with my friends, I was active in Sunday school. And I once confided in my volunteer teacher, perhaps maybe in sixth or seventh grade, I told her that I thought I wanted to be a minister. And she didn't understand. You want to be the youth director? You want to be the choir director? No, I want to be the minister. I want to be the preacher. Oh, she said patiently, honey, women aren't made to be ministers. But maybe you and your future husband together could do ministry. Side note here, my husband, Brian, who's sitting back there, he's an awesome guy, and he is a leader in his own right, but he likes coming to church, but I think he'd rather do just about anything than join me in ministry. So that would not have worked. And just like that, the door to ministry was closed. Until many years later, when I was in college and I discovered Unitarian Universalism by accident. That's a story for another sermon. And I went to my local Unitarian Universalist congregation, a large, well-established congregation, and I saw a woman leading. But it still took years for that little voice of my childhood self to reemerge and to remind me of my closet churches and how much I felt drawn and connected and supported by religious community. It took years for that childhood calling to emerge again as a realistic vision for my future. I was in graduate school in clinical psychology, and I was deeply unhappy. I just wasn't cut out for the publish or perish mentality of academia. And it turns out, I just didn't really love clinical psychology after all. But I was 3 years into a PhD program, and it would have been foolish to quit. And one day in class, we were learning a counseling technique, and something happened. The technique goes like this. If your client, you're a therapist, if your client is struggling with making a decision, you have them imagine that there are two versions of themselves. One version who wants to go with one alternative in this decision, and one version who wants to go with the other alternative in the decision. You have them sort of split themselves mentally. And then you have them speak from one side of the argument to an empty chair, where they imagine the other side to be sitting. And then switch chairs and speak from the other side of the argument. Back and forth, they switch, hearing themselves speak from both sides of the decision. That's the technique. So that day in class, I was assigned to be the client in a role play with a classmate who was my therapist. So I decided to pick an easy decision that I was considering. I didn't want to go too hard on my classmate in a practice. So I decided to say, I'm trying to decide, should I leave graduate school and go to seminary to become a minister? So I spoke first from the side that was strongest, to stay in graduate school. I spoke to the empty chair with conviction, clearly articulated, very well thought out, logical reasons why I should stay in graduate school. When it was time to switch chairs and speak from the part of myself that wanted to leave graduate school and go to seminary, I paused for a long time. And then a voice came from deep within me. It came from my soul, you might say. A voice that I actually didn't even recognize. I looked at that empty chair where my clearly reasoned self sat invisibly, and I said, "You never listen to me." My classmate was like, "Oh." Well then, she's listening. We proceeded with that exercise, and it turned out that that little voice was there. It was there from my childhood, from my closet churches, all along, but had been so stifled by reality and reason that I had long forgotten it. This exercise had allowed me some space to consider that voice, and I eventually entered into a period of discernment with my minister. And within a year, I started seminary. This story of calling and childhood reminds me that this is where we are, me and you. That we are here at the beginning of a new life. A new life of a shared ministry that no one knows where it will go or how it will turn out, like the new life of a child who is finding their way. If we're willing this year to listen carefully and pay attention, we might be able to notice and discern our calling. Some parts of our calling might already be clear. One of the things I learned about you when I came for candidating week is that you have grown a lot. And you have changed a lot since your inception. It was only a few years ago that this sanctuary was built, and now it's overflowing. Only about 25 years ago did you call your first settled senior minister. And in the world of faith communities, 25 years is fast. But in all your rapid growth and change, you have kept about you a core sense of who you are. You know yourself as a liberal religious community, bringing openness, welcome, and a spirit of active involvement to keep this community going strong. Your mission and calling to welcome, grow, and lead is a continuation of who you have been for many, many years, and it will continue to be who you are with me for years to come. So you know that part of your calling. But as we listen to the voice of our calling together in this coming year or beyond, we might realize that there are some parts of our calling that has been stifled. Perhaps beloved traditions have actually held us back from hearing all of our calling. Or perhaps we tried stuff in the past and it didn't work, so we feel like we can't try it again. I know that there are ways in which this transition period has been really difficult. I just want to name that. I honor the incredible work of your transition ministers and Reverend Leah and your incredible staff and board and lay leaders, all the work that they have done to make this transition as smooth as possible. But I know that there was deep sadness when Roger left. I know there was some surprise at how his relationship with the fellowship shifted. I know there was heartbreak and insecurity after a really tricky interim search period, a rocky start to your transitional ministry. And I know because I've heard from you that it took a toll on many of you, especially those of you in leadership. It might have felt at times like the world was coming down on you hard with all sorts of reality, with a refrain of no. And when that happens, it's easy to lose sight of your calling, but you persevered. You did not let go of who you are, and now here we are, given a gift of a fresh start, a joyful yes, and a chance to hear and reclaim the voice of our calling together. Nancy Schaefer, in the reading we heard earlier, said, quote, tell us, please, all you can about that voice. Teach us how to listen and how to hear. Teach us all you can of saying yes. We need to hear that voice and to begin to say yes, to try stuff, to listen to each other, to experiment, to explore and mess up and try again. Blessed are they who refuse to listen to the naysayers, for their hearts will be houses of hope. I'm so excited for this year with you, friends. This year of new beginnings, each turn of the fellowship year, the mingling of the waters, the solstice, Christmas Eve, flower celebration, and more, each of these will be in their own ways new, with fresh opportunities for learning. I want to take a moment to assure you, to reassure you, that I will spend a great deal of time and energy this year listening and learning, approaching you and your practices with respect and with a beginner's mind. But we will also try new things together. Now is the time to do it. There will be enough time in the future for caution. It's my prayer that we will use this new beginning as a time for adventure and exploration and fearlessness, a time for laughter and creating deep relationships and cultivating an ability to bounce back from failure, like children who have not yet internalized the world's no. In closing, I want to share with you this prayer, these words by the Reverend Leslie Ahuva Fales, which encapsulates my hope for the beginning upon which we gather, for this leap we are about to take. All that we have been separately and all that we will become together is stretched out before and behind us like stars scattered across a canvas of sky. We stand at the precipice, arms locked together like tandem skydivers working on the courage to jump. Tell me, friends, what have we got to lose? Our fear of failure? Our mistrust of our own talents? What have we got to lose? A poverty of spirit? The lie that we are alone? What wonders await us in the space between the first leap and the moment that our feet, our wheels, however we move our bodies across this precious earth, touch down softly on unknown soil? What have we got to lose that we can't replace with some previously unimaginable joy? Blessed are you, Spirit of Life, who has sustained us, enlivened us, and enabled us to reach this moment. give us courage in our leaping and gratitude in our landing, and share with us in the joy of a long and fruitful ministry together. Amen. Blessed be, and may it be so.